This is episode one of season four, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring Sophia Wang from Mycoworks.
You're listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring inspiring stories from women in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host, Barbara Lee.
In our first episode of season four, we offer you a conversation with Sophia Wang and a glimpse into what a fully sustainable future could look like. Sophia and her team at Mycoworks are creating fabrics from mycelium, the fine woven fibers that make up the root system of mushrooms. This material, called fine mycelium, is engineered to mimic other animal-based or synthetic materials, like leather. Since reishi is made from a mushroom fiber and tanned using vegetable-based dyes, the material is both incredibly adaptable and biodegradable. What this means is that when Hermès goes to make a purse out of fine mycelium, which they will be doing in partnership with Mycoworks shortly, you can purchase this bag and when it's worn out in, say, 20 years, all you would have to do to throw it out is to put it in your compost or bury it in your garden, and the material would go back to the earth. What if every fabric on the planet was made out of a material like fine mycelium? We could help divert 21 billion pounds of clothing waste from sitting in a landfill each year. Sit with that idea for a moment. Let's get trash talking. Hey, Sophia, welcome to Trash Talking.
Hi, Barbara, great to be here.
Can you tell our listeners who you are and what it is that you do?
My name is Sophia Wang. I am the co-founder and chief of culture of Mycoworks.
Cool. And what does Mycoworks do?
Mycoworks is a San Francisco Bay Area biotechnology company.
So what does that actually mean in practice?
Mycoworks has developed the technology platform that we call Fine Mycelium. That's a platform for advanced materials made from mycelium, which is an abundant and natural resource that is bringing greater design possibilities and more sustainable material options for fashion and luxury and fashion supply chains more broadly. And our first product is reishi, which is a finished fine mycelium option for fine leather. And we were really excited to announce our first partnership publicly this past March with Hermès and more to come.
What does it mean to be the chief of culture for Mycoworks? I'm assuming it means working with mushroom cultures, but I could be totally wrong.
Well, actually, it is about the company's general operating principles that contribute culturally to the foundation of our company and the vision and where we're taking it.
Love that. How did Mycoworks get started?
We have a great story. We are a biotechnology company founded by artists. So it goes way back to the 80s, 90s with my co-founder, Phil Ross, who's an artist also based in the Bay Area at the time on the East Coast, working as a chef, learning about foraging for wild mushrooms, also starting to learn about the incredible medicinal qualities that mushrooms have had, for instance, in traditional Chinese medicine and traditional medicines around the world. Coming to the Bay Area in the 90s and starting to develop an artistic practice, studying art at SFAI and Stanford here in the Bay Area, and growing mycelium and reishi mushrooms in his own studio and kitchen for medicinal use, and learning about the amazing material qualities that mycelium has, how dynamic it is, how responsive it is to its environment. It's a very dynamic casting material in a way that you can manipulate over time. And so Phil was starting to create sculptures and art objects and architectural structures with mycelium, starting to realize that it had incredible potential as a design material and potentially for industrial design. And so that's the deep backstory in terms of the artistic origins of the company. Phil and I came together as artists in the San Francisco Bay Area art community. We collaborated on an exhibit together and a series of public programs on the history of biotech and bioreactors back in 2007. I was doing my PhD in English and I had founded a dance company and was working in the humanities, but professionalizing in the art world. That's how Phil and I connected. And that's where I first encountered mycelium as a material, the artwork Spill was making with it, and it's just mind-blowing to see what this natural material could do. So when I finished my PhD a few years later, Phil came back around and said, you know, I'm getting invitations from companies around the world that have seen, you know, examples and samples of my work, and they want to use mycelium materials in their manufacturing. So let's start a company to actually commercialize this material. That was back in 2013, and it's been a wild ride ever since. Two artists doing biotech.
I want to dig in a little bit more on some of the terms you just mentioned, because I'm not sure if everyone will be familiar with how Phil was using mycelium in art or terms like casting.
Oh, sure. So casting material really just means creating a mold or a positive form, and then having your material that you're working with become the fill the negative space, right? So you can actually create a form in any shape and introduce mycelium into it, and it will grow to that shape.
And what does that mean in terms of being able to use mycelium for textiles? How are you making mushrooms into a usable material for fashion?
Sure. Yeah. So let's take a big step back and break down some of the terms. So mycelium and mushrooms first. The distinction there is a really helpful one to make. So mycelium refers to the interconnected web of fibers that makes up, let's say, the root structure and the vegetative body of the organism that grows mushrooms. So we take mycelium, and through our fine mycelium process, we actually engineer the mycelium cells as they grow to form proprietary interwoven three-dimensional structures that are analogous to the triple helix structure of collagen, of what you find in animal leather. It's a structure, molecular structure, that is inherently strong and versatile and highly engineerable. We can induce it to grow in different shapes and densities. And we grow it in sheep. We harvest the sheep, and then we tan them and cure them in partnership with heritage leather tanneries. Through that process, we create a material that is very easy to introduce into existing processes for design and fabrication in fashion and luxury.
It sounds like this is somewhat different than what Phil was building with mycelium in his early artwork days. And I encourage anyone to head over to the website to check out those photos.
We are actually following a different process from the casting process that Phil was initially developing to create sculptures out of mycelium. But our current process very much comes from those initial experimentations.
When you're talking about tanning materials, does it still retain its biodegradability and minimize impact on the planet?
So we're following a tanning process using vegetable-based tannins and endeavoring to use green chemistries. And so mycelium itself, being a natural material that is actually highly regenerative itself in the environment as it naturally exists, is enabling a product that is biodegradable.
I'm assuming leather is one of the first materials that you're replicating, but what are some of the other materials that you could potentially replicate using your biodegradable mycelium?
Yes, it's really exciting. That is why we think of fine mycelium as a platform technology. We know that it can create this analog for leather, but we absolutely know that it can create many other kinds of materials. Pretty much, you know, any soft good, things that might currently be made from polyurethanes or that look more like compressed foams. And then, of course, looking back to the materials that Phil was developing as an artist, a lot of the objects that he was making were more rigid and structural in nature, blocks and panels and bricks. And so we know that mycelium can do that as well.
What's the reality of the situation? I'm glad that there are designer brands like Hermes who are really thinking about using mycelium as a basis for their products. But for us to really achieve a fully sustainable planet, everything needs to be converted over, like fake leathers and different synthetic materials that are actually created with petroleum and that never break down in the landfill.
The future of sustainability for fashion and supply chains more broadly, I think, really does require taking an even larger step back from where we are. And I'll say that when I look at what true sustainability looks like, it's a very complicated story of which we're playing an important singular role. If you think of materials just being one element, and things like your waste water pollution or your emissions or your workers' rights or the other materials that you're using, or, you know, the level of transparency that you as a company are offering in terms of your environmental and social impact, true sustainability is a matrix of all of those elements. And I'm really excited that mycelium, or fine mycelium, our product, is offering companies, you know, at least a material option that is, you know, has huge advantages over existing traditional materials in terms of potential impact. And really, the greatest impact that we will have with our material is through the broadest adoption, you know, across fashion, across luxury. And for that reason, that's why we as a company have been focusing on the performance and quality of our material. We know that we need to compete with existing materials that are beloved and at scale and ubiquitous. In order to compete with them, we have to offer, you know, comparable quality, comparable performance, but also, you know, we're offering an amazing advantage that a lot of natural materials don't have. Fine mycelium is a highly engineerable process and material. We can grow it to nearly any size or shape or form or density and finish it in an amazing range of finishes. So we offer a lot of flexibility as well as greater sustainability. So we're one part of the larger story. I think that we'll see that as more and more brands prioritize sustainability, they're shifting not just the materials that they're using, they're actually looking to all of those other components as well, how much transparency they're offering, what rights they're extending to their workers, what is their relationship to the water and chemicals they're using, their waste, their pollution, and so on.
I don't mean to put the whole weight of the fashion industry on the shoulders of MycoWorks and Mycelium, but I think it's something to ask. There are things that need to happen between now and where we get to a fully sustainable system, for example, cost. I don't know how much it costs to create a sheet of reishi today versus using something that's already part of our current systems.
Right. I think that's a really good point. I think that we are inspiring partnerships with brands that can be role models and early adopters in the industry. They, in that process, are starting to build the relationships that they will need to build across their entire supply chain, where they're investing in the development of a new technology and they are investing in the planning and the design process that's required to work with a new material and to work with a new producer. Obviously, materials exist at scale and are easier and cheaper to use and to access. But, you know, the year of COVID 2020, I think we saw that didn't insulate companies and supply chains from a lot of resistance and availability and access, right? There were huge problems in supply chain. And we exist in a highly interconnected system, and it's quite vulnerable when you think about it. And so we are offering a technology that is highly portable, that is low footprint, that can be developed, you know, co-located with your manufacturing facility, that can use local waste streams as its substrate and intake. The brands that we're working with are really excited about this future where they have greater control over their material. And so they're willing to actually put in the extra time. And as you say, in your reference to cost, absolutely, the higher costs that are associated with bringing a new material, new technology into the world.
And why fashion? Why not tackle a bigger industry like construction? You mentioned that this product could be used in a lot of different applications.
Absolutely. And we are so excited about the really wide horizon of applications and other industries that we can touch. We've actually demonstrated that our materials can go there. You know, in our first years as a company, we were exploring structural, architectural, construction-based applications because those were the most immediate applications that Phil's artworks had demonstrated. So we were talking to, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's and places like that. And there's immense interest in this as material for green building. Why don't we go there first? Simple economies of scale, you know, materials that you need to go into those spaces need to be extremely broadly, widely scaled up. Materials that they have to compete with are quite, you know, cheap on the market as they are. And so the plan has always been, you know, let's demonstrate what this technology can do. Let's demonstrate the you know, high quality and high performance that we can reach with this technology. And then as we scale it, we'll be able to reach broader markets that require greater volumes.
Totally agree. Sophia, why is this topic of sustainability important to you? Coming more from the art world with a PhD in writing, but you've somehow embarked on the several-year journey to create a sustainable material for an industry that historically hasn't cared that much about their environmental impact.
That's a great question. I would really point back to some of my deepest formative experiences in terms of justice. I really came into social justice first, as a young person, as a grad student at Berkeley, participating in anti-privatization movements, supporting students' rights over privatization of governance, over what is supposed to be a public institution. That led me to the relationships that were formative in terms of my entry into the Occupy movement.
For those who missed it, in 2011, the Occupy movement was an international progressive movement that protested the social and economic inequality around the world.
That was really radicalizing for me. I understood what it meant to work in solidarity with your local community, but also with larger causes, and to think about systemic injustices and how they basically touch every aspect of our lives. So I would say that I'm passionate about this from the perspective of an activist who's thinking not just about sustainability of materials and ethical consumerism, but actually how this touches on environmental and social justice, both of which are deeply decolonizing efforts. As a person of color, as a woman, I've, you know, moved in a world that has really been built around the exploitations and injustices of privatized capital. I think any way that I can contribute to modeling a better way to make things, and also in terms of, you know, we talked about a better way of being as a collaboration of people, that is a way that I can have a platform for a broader conversation with the world about the world we're trying to make. So I'm very passionate about it from, I would say, a really, really intersectional point of view.
Yes, and let's tie this back in together. The material you're building is sustainable, but you're building something bigger than that. How do they connect for you?
My passion as the head of culture at MicaWorks is in ensuring that our values as a company carry through and scale as our company scales. And I think about our values as a set of principles to live and work by that impact how we work together internally and support each other, and also our impact and communications out into the world. So everyone from people in our marketing and finance to people in our R&D and production line is being encouraged to own the creative solutions to the challenges that we're collectively trying to solve. You know, externally, this refers to, you know, it's sort of the seeds of our corporate responsibility, our impact. I think about that in terms of what we're modeling for our brand partners and what we're modeling for being able to say, like, I have this amazing bag that, you know, is from the designer that I absolutely admire and that I have a deep emotional connection to. And not only that, I have the bag that's made with this revolutionary new material that's going to change the world. And I want to, you know, carry it and show the world that I'm living my values.
Something else I wanted to talk to you about is the availability of sustainable materials and the green movement for folks who are maybe not able to afford high-end luxury goods. I think Tesla is a company that I really admire, but it was a very interesting approach to build their top-of-line vehicles first, then work their way towards more financially accessible cars. In doing so, they actually created status around having an electric vehicle, right? Especially in comparison to a Prius. But how do we move from that consumer design for luxury goods to making this accessible for everyone?
It has always made sense to us to enter through luxury if you demonstrate that you have met the highest standards in the industry, then you demonstrate that you can actually meet them more broadly and work with the widest range of partners possible. And at that point, it becomes a matter of scale. So absolutely, I don't think there's any, like, a single person in our company who wants to keep this to a narrow set of partners. Absolutely. Our goal has always been to make our technology ubiquitous and to serve, you know, new design possibilities wherever it can, and to also offer the highest quality. And I think that with scale, we'll be able to do all of that.
What would it take for us to get from where you are today, starting to get small rounds of funding for your company and partnering with your first luxury designer, to using biodegradable fine mycelium in all industries?
So where we are today is we've come a long way. We are seed funded, but actually we are actually funded through our Series B. We raised our Series B from a landscape investors who are very enthusiastic about supporting this technology. So where do we need to be today to get this everywhere? Well, we're growing dynamically. We were like 65 people at the start of the year, and now we're pushing 130-ish, 150. We're growing our capacity and also deepening our knowledge of the technology, generating agile IP around it. And of course, the brand partnerships, which give us so much momentum and the validation and also the pipeline of getting, you know, products onto shelves into consumers' hands, that I think will be really the next large milestone for us in terms of what being one step closer to really having ubiquity with this technology.
And is this what listeners should be doing at home, demanding that anything they purchase be made from sustainable materials?
Absolutely. Think about where your materials come from. I generally think about, you know, follow the money, follow the supply chain, follow the benefit and impact, and that'll give you the full story for who is truly benefiting from a system or a process that you're engaging in. And then consider, you know, where and how you want to participate in that. Or do you want to steer it yourself? Do you want to steer yourself towards solutions that are really offering, you know, a level of transparency and accountability that resonates with your values? I think as individuals, that's what we can do. I like to always open further out that it's not, you know, it's not on the shoulders of individuals to change the world. I mean, that's where corporations and nation states, right, regulating bodies come into play. They're the ones who have the real power to make the broadest impact. And so companies like ours partnering with entire industries is a very powerful channel to shift that. And of course, we want the consumer support in that and individuals like the people, you know, pouring their heart and soul into making this technology possible by, you know, joining our team. But I think that as consumers, absolutely, we have a lot of power, but the broadest power, of course, lies in larger entities.
Sophia, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for your questions. It was a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this first episode with Sophia and that it provided you with some level of deep thought into how realistic a sustainable future could be. I actually wasn't fully prepared for where our conversation with Sophia was going to go, and the fact that she had come into the sustainability movement through her passion for justice and equitability blew me away. Personally, I was working for a legal nonprofit during the time of the Occupy movement, and while my participation was through work, it really resonated with the idea that environmentalism isn't just about the planet. It's about a more just, fair, and equitable planet for everyone. Don't forget to follow us on social media and Instagram at Trashy Beauty Co. We'll actually be releasing details around the small sustainable gift package for a listener of the show. You'll also get the latest news on every episode when it's released. As always, to help support this podcast, please like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends. It helps us boost our impact and visibility. You can also find a link to make contributions to our project through Anchor FM. Find the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, Eco Warriors. Stay green.
Trash Talking with Eco Warriors is produced by Hanzel Rodriguez, production assistance by Belinda Chu, and hosted by Barbara Lee. Thanks for listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at Trashy Beauty Co.